times where Elton has looked incredible and has a great, albeit very elevated, sense of style, but there's a lot of times where he's looked fairly odd as well. And I have found the process of sort of inhabiting him and his wardrobe, yeah, incredibly liberating. There's not a great deal that would make me blush now, to be honest.
That was Taron Egerton, who plays Elton John in the new movie Rocket Man. And we're going to talk about that movie along with the new Godzilla movie, and we'll have a couple of things in summer preview. Summer's here, and we'll tell you what we're looking forward to. And we're going to talk about some things on DVD and streaming, like The Upside. And, oh, it's just going to be a heck of a podcast today. I'm Neil Rosen. Joined as always
I'm rock
by,
hard.
Joined as always by Bill Brigoli.
That would be me.
And Bill McCuddy.
Yes.
And we're sitting around talking movies. And let's talk about Rocket Man. So,
most anticipated movie of the beginning of the summer.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm very familiar with Elton John's music. I've been a lifelong fan.
Because the rest of us aren't. We have no idea who he is.
And I'm very familiar with the music. And, you know, I read before I saw it when it premiered at Cannes that purists will have a problem with the chronology of the music. In other words, which is true, I did, you know.
You're a purist.
When he's struggling, it's the biopic of Elton John. Elton John executive produced the film, and it looks at his beginnings as a child prodigy at the London Royal Academy of Music, where he's just like a genius at playing the piano. He's like a little kid, and he gets accepted to this prestigious musical institution.
I'm changing my name to Elton. That's my name. I don't care. Whatever that fucking thing is in there.
Yeah, and the John apparently comes from John Lennon.
No, it doesn't.
Well, in the movie it does.
In the movie it does. It was actually Long John Baldry.
No kidding.
Who happened to be gay. Right.
Wow, and they changed that, and Elton John was the executive producer, and he said, you got the origin of my name wrong?
In the movie, as Bill Brigoli will tell you, he's sitting in the agent's office, agent, manager, whatever it is, and he goes, what's your name? And he goes, Elton. And he goes, Elton what? And he looks over at the wall, and there's a picture of the Beatles, and he looks at John Lennon, and he goes, John, Elton John, because he idolizes Lennon.
If he'd been looking in the bathroom, he'd have been Elton Lou.
There you go. That's not funny.
Over there.
But sometimes you are very funny.
Okay, thank you.
But so that's not true, and that's very interesting to me. And there are a lot of things that are factually incorrect in the movie, which kind of bugged me. So when he meets Bernie Taupin, and when they're struggling playing like crappy, he's playing like crappy like bar in somewhere in England, and there's like eight people in the audience. And all of a sudden, they start fighting in the bar, and he starts playing Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. Well, that song was written like 35 years later.
All right. This is where I have to go. Screech, halt.
Why?
It's not a biopic. It's a musical, boys.
It is a musical. It's a Broadway musical. And here's my example. Okay. You know in Broadway musicals...
Neil's really excited now because he's leaning forward, and he's actually speaking into the microphone.
You know in Broadway musicals how in the middle of a normal conversation, people will burst into song, and it's very unrealistic.
Yes, I've seen that, Neil.
So Elton John will be talking to somebody, you know, and he's going, gee, I really want to make it as a musician, and I really like you. And she'll look at him and go... It's a little bit funny, this feeling inside. You know, it's not one of
those.
Well,
that's what they did with all the ABBA songs. They built a story around.
You know, don't have much, but it's the best. And it's like they're singing the songs. And unlike Bohemian Rhapsody, where the songs were played in context of you heard all those Queen songs, either they were performing them on stage or in a club or in the recording studio. Hear the songs, as Taron Egerton said last night on Jimmy Kimmel.
That must be true.
They're weaved.
Lies to Kimmel.
The lyrics of the songs are weaved into the fabric of the film, and they take the lyrics and kind of build the story around it. So you're absolutely right, Bill Brigoli. It's a biopic musical.
Apparently they all thought, and I haven't seen the film yet, apparently they all thought this made for a better movie, but you didn't think so.
No, I thought that Taron Egerton was great. I mean, he looks, sounds, and he does like Elton John.
See, because that's not the rap I've been hearing from like our colleague Jeffrey Wells, who thought basically he was doing like a karaoke thing.
I thought he was great. I think the songs hold up and they speak for themselves. They're terrific. But the narrative bothered me, not only that it was out of order in terms of the songs, but it was just kind of predictable, dopey. And then you like that Your Song thing I was doing a minute ago when they start talking and
is that what you were
and all
doing?
Of a sudden dancers will pop out like on a Broadway stage and start dancing on the street. And I don't know. I didn't,
it's a musical.
Yeah, I didn't care for this format. I would rather. And apparently,
you know, at the beginning of La La Land, people don't really get out of their cars and start dancing when there's a big pile up in Los Angeles.
Well,
cue the horn on the street. Thank
apparently,
you.
Apparently, Elton John's been trying to get this movie made for 20 years, and different studios that he went to wanted a straight up narrative, not this Broadway musical thing that you're talking about, Bill Bregoli.
They didn't want it as gay as it is either.
Yeah, I know. Yes, there's a couple of scenes of lovemaking scenes, male on male lovemaking scenes.
I thought I read
that was fine. I just didn't like.
I heard he wanted it druggier.
Yeah,
druggy. They wanted it druggier.
Yeah. Druggier than all the other film companies. Paramount actually was okay with it because look how many pictures they've had.
They didn't sniff at it. But, again, not funny.
Well, what do you think of the film, Bill?
Well, it made me think of something that. About the songwriting process. Sometimes you think in these, you're led to believe that these songs relate to a certain point in Elton John's life. Don't forget, he didn't write the lyrics.
None of the lyrics.
Bernie Taupin wrote the lyrics, right. And they did not write together. Bernie Taupin would go home, write stuff, put it on paper, give it to Elton. So in a way, it's not.
We were never going to see the magic because right.
It wasn't there.
It wasn't there.
Well,
yeah.
They do show you, there's a song called Border Song. Holy Moses, I have been deceived.
You can just tell us the title.
So, yeah, he gives him the lyrics, and he sits at the piano, and you see him kind of fucking around with the piano.
Yeah, but apparently that's a lie.
I don't know.
It
I mean,
might have happened once in a while, but yeah, generally, no, they didn't write together.
I saw Elton John many times in concert, and he said one of the times that Bernie Taupin and I, we don't write together. He exactly what you said, Bill, that he hands him the lyrics and he goes off and he writes.
Right, but that's not a movie, Neil. So then Hollywood said, boys.
Story. It's about how he becomes addicted to drugs and he becomes a sexaholic and he's struggling with his sexual identity and he's having really bad daddy issues. I mean, that was actually an interesting scene about where the father, he gets no love and affection from his father growing up and then he goes back as a superstar to visit his father, who's now divorced from his real-life mom and has another family. And he's hugging all these new kids that he's got. John's really like, are you kidding me? You know, this guy like is like emotionless. And here he is just like, come on my knee, Johnny. Let's, So there were some interesting. I didn't hate the movie. I just.
Going to be a big hit or not?
You wanted the songs in
chronological order.
Will it be a bigger hit than Bohemian Rhapsody?
I think Bohemian Rhapsody is the better film for my taste. And I prefer, I like Queen music, but I given the choice, I'd prefer Elton John music to Queen. So I don't know. I don't think it's going to be as big as Bohemian Rhapsody. What do you think, Bill?
I think it'll be as big as, and I think it's a better film than Bohemian Rhapsody.
Why?
Because of what they do with the source material.
So you
because
like
because
the
they made it
musical.
A musical, and yeah. I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody seems so cleaned up and band-approved biopic stamped on it.
Yeah, well, we talked about that. And
yeah, we talked about the fact
wasn't
that
gritty
like, you
enough
see any of the partying.
This is,
oh,
yeah,
what a
this
nice list.
Didn't
nice
stop
list.
It from making $1 billion.
Yeah, and his songs are very popular. It'll probably do quite well. If they're going to getting straight guys to see it, supposedly is going to be a marketing problem. That's something to think about.
Will Edgerton be nominated the way Rami Malek was?
I think it's a possibility. I haven't
it's
seen anything, but
go.
It's early
it's
in the year.
May,
it's a long, winding, yellow brick road. Yellow some kind of road. What's the fucking song?
The Goodbye Yellow Brick Road
Goodbye
is the
yellow
song.
Brick road, thank
but
you.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's May. Academy Award nominations are January. That is a long road to go, you know? When did Bohemian Rhapsody come out? Was it a fall? Wasn't that
it was fall, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Will he be remembered come Oscar time? I don't know. Well, are you going to see it, Bill McCuddy? Bill Bregoli and I did.
Yeah, I have to see it. I mean, it was one of the things that we've been talking about for months now. And, people saw it at Cannes. It got kind of mixed reaction over there. But I will go see it.
There are things that are accurate, although Plato, I mean, he did not make it at first in England. He made it in the United States, and he made it at the Troubadour Club in Los Angeles. And there's a whole article about how when he's playing the piano, he kind of is at a 90 degree angle and like kind of levitating off the stage and playing the piano. And they said, yeah, because even though that's not realistic, Elton John or Edgerton said that, yeah, Elton felt like he was like flying in the air when he was at that club playing and kind
so
of
that's,
making stage.
So that's why they did that.
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of a fantasy. It's not.
Yeah, really, and if Bohemian Rhapsody is...
straight up.
Let's say a realistic style painting.
Yes, this is
Elton John is impressionistic.
And it's an impression.
Lots of little dots.
Nice.
There's a point, maybe it's a pointillism.
Nice. I feel like we're on a PBS call-in show.
Yes.
For $25, you get the tote bag.
That's right. And if you spend $100, you get the CDs, the tote bag.
All right, what else? Can we do a little...
So on my Big Apple rating scale out of a possible four...
Yes, please, regale us with that.
Between 2.5 and 3 apples on this. How many would you...
In my Guinness pints scale of 5 pints of Guinness, I give it a solid 4.
Solid 4, wow.
Pints, wow.
Wow, yeah, I mean, 5 pints is
about as much as I can handle.
I'm going 3. I'm going 3. Okay. And you're seeing it. Okay, so let's...
But I'm going to drink 4 pints of Guinness before I go. Because I like his system better, and I think most of our listeners will, too.
Okay. Well, which brings us to...
Godzilla.
Godzilla. Let's hear something from someone or in
Sure. We'll hear from Millie Bobby Brown. Remember the little girl with the shaved head in Stranger Things?
She's in this, huh?
She's in this. Okay. And, she talks about all the women in this movie.
There are a lot of men in the movie, and they play amazing characters, but our women, like Vera, Sally... Just great base characters that are so strong and powerful and leading women that really are inspirational. And I think it's so important for young women to look at this movie and realize that, you know what, this is a big blockbuster movie and look at these women. They're amazing in it.
The women are strong in this thing because you got some
Farmiga,
big names.
Damn it.
You got Vera Farmiga. You can't get her if you can't.
Vera Farmiga is like
script.
A classy actress. What the hell is she doing in a Godzilla film?
You think Godzilla, Mothra, Vera Farmiga. You think of those three when you think of...
That's right.
Tell us about it, Bill Brigoli.
Well, this
let me guess,
entity.
There's a lizard or something in this movie.
Oh,
a giant lizard.
There's more than a giant lizard. There's all these other things. There's a three-headed monster, and there's Mothra, who looks like a giant moth. And there's a government entity looking after them. And then there's another bunch of guys all headed by Charles Dance, who want to go after the monster, too.
Where does it take place? What city?
All over the world, place. Neil. Have you seen...
No,
climb
I
out
have
the
not
rock.
Seen
all right.
This has been the biggest campaign that this studio...
So
has
it's not Tokyo, and it's not like the other...
There is another city that gets destroyed, but let me wait on that. Before I tell you what city it is.
It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt him a lot to
it's
tell you.
It's not New York.
Well, let's
it's
see.
Not
the original
New York.
Was Tokyo.
New York.
Then the Matthew Broderick one was New York. Then the last one,
I
think, was
LA. You're
going to
make me tell you now. It's Boston.
Your hometown.
They stomp on Fenway Park.
They destroy Fenway Park. Oh. Jeffrey Lyons was in the corner crying.
I bet you he was.
The colleague of ours who lives about 100 feet from this apartment.
Who loves more than movie. A movie critic who loves baseball.
Red Sox wears the jacket every day like a 5-year-old.
Yeah. Well, anyway. So they chase these monsters around. Let me cut to the chase this movie. The first part of it, you do see monsters. They don't make you wait forever. They don't have Matthew Broderick in it either, thank goodness.
How about Raymond Burr? They,
they don't have Raymond
CGI
Burr.
And all
Millie Bobby Brown is a rebellious teenager who's fussing with her mom. But so there are human stories, but as far as people sitting down, all you need to know is it's a bit slow and dark at the beginning. You do see monsters. About 1.75 hours into it, all the monsters get together, have a great big fight like a kid with action figures.
And Godzilla's on our side.
And Godzilla's on our side.
Right. So we like Godzilla.
From all the others. Right.
From your description.
And we're not supposed to fat shame him, I'm reading, because he's fat in this one.
He looks like he's, gained some weight.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like Homer Simpson.
He could have been wearing
Godzilla?
A fat suit. Yeah, he's big.
You haven't been read anything about this movie, have you?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I've seen enough Godzilla movies
But they've been talking about this, like people are fat-shaming Godzilla.
From the way you're describing this, it sounds like that movie, which title escapes me, that we've talked about on this podcast.
Pacific Rim?
With Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Oh, not the reptile.
No, not the skyscraper one.
No, the one before that.
Yeah, the one before, exactly.
Where he was the zookeeper.
And he's like battling these giant monsters and stuff. Like, do you remember the name of this movie?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, it sounds...
He saved the world. He does that in every movie, though.
It sounds like... No, it was a gorilla or something that mutated.
Yes, a silverback. Right. He's
Yeah, but no, they're not.
And
like,
then the gorilla wound up being on our side.
But Godzilla is not like a tame zoo animal that somebody befriends.
No, Neil, this is completely beast. Different.
So why is he helping us? Why is he on our side?
Because we're good to him, and
we're good to him. We don't fire tanks and nuclear missiles at Godzilla.
Not anymore. We don't.
Okay.
But it's right. Look, Ken Watanabe's in it. There's at least one Japanese person in this movie.
And Thomas Middleditch from
who I talked to on the phone, and he talked about how big these sets were compared to his usual work on Silicon Valley.
I remember one of the bigger scenes that I was involved in was like an entire soundstage that was devoted to kind of look like the Arctic. And so all the floor was Epsom salt, and all the snow that was flying around the air was like soap suds. So it was definitely there was some eyeball collateral damage, but outside of that, it was the scale of it. It's huge.
So now we know the secret. It's Epsom salts and soap flakes. It's a lie. It's all a lie.
It's all fake. He actually did. I don't know if you heard the interview with him where he talked. He brought this up in other interviews, that they had built a set on a gimbal that was supposed to shake like they were being attacked by the monster.
Right.
It didn't work, and they had to do like the original Star Trek actors and all kind of shaking their seats
themselves.
And pretend, yeah.
He said for 12 days they've been building this thing up, but they were going to have this like amazing. Whole set was going to move, and then they went, it kind of doesn't.
So shaking.
Would you recommend this, Bill Bruegel?
You know what? If you're a monster movie fan and you like the big film franchises and stuff, it's fine.
I'm going to pass on this one.
Let me ask you this.
I'm going to wait for it on...
Compared to the last Godzilla movie?
It's better.
It's better.
Yep.
Compared to the Matthew Broderick Godzilla?
It's a million times better.
Compared to the Raymond Burr Godzilla? I love the Raymond Burr one. That's the original one.
I saw the one before that. The Japanese version without Raymond Burr.
Oh, well, that's kind of good too, right?
Yeah, that was okay.
All right. So,
I had just gotten the script for Perry.
Well, the reason to answer your question, Bill McCuddy, is
Della Street.
I'm Godzilla'd out. I've seen enough Godzilla movies: Godzilla versus King Kong, Godzilla this one, Godzilla. I could care less. So I just tuned out to it. So no, I'm not going to see it.
Okay, fine.
You're not going to see it.
We
either.
Won't go together.
So there was a movie that we a French movie from a number of years ago called The Intouchables, which was quite nice, charming. You know,
It was
about
great.
A handicapped guy who kind of gave up on life, and he had this aide who kind of showed him things aren't so bad. You could enjoy yourself even though you're confined.
Who was
to
that guy? Was that Daniel Oyelowo?
No,
it was somebody that they said was going to be a big star, and the French actor was Daniel whatever.
Well, anyway,
we're so bad at this show.
So they remade this movie.
Please write us.
An American
tell us to
movie
stop.
With Bryan Cranston as the wheelchair bound person who's disillusioned with the world.
And Nicole Kidman.
And Nicole Kidman is in this thing.
Yes.
Okay. And Kevin Hart is the aide.
Yes.
So take it away, Bill McCuddy.
Well,
it's now streaming and on DVD and all the other platforms.
By the way, I have this theory, which anybody who wants to be Kevin Hart can be Kevin Hart. All you have to do is start a joke with damn and end it with, am I right? So it's like, damn, Starbucks should just be called Bucks. Am I right? That's basically the whole act. He's trying to stretch out a little here. The movie made about $108 million. It's a decent remake. It's different. It's lighter in places. The character played by Bryan Cranston is a quadriplegic, and we learn how and why that happened. And then it's the typical, I'm going to take you out of your penthouse and show you the world kind of movies. He's got a fleet of cars.
That's the French film.
That's the same deal.
They go hang gliding,
his own, he's got his own ideas. This guy has written books on how small businesses can become big businesses, and so Kevin is pitching him ideas for what he wants to do.
Is Kevin funny?
Kevin is very funny, but he is playing it straight for most of the film, and it's very watchable. I highly recommend it.
Do they go hang gliding like in the French
version? They do go hang gliding. Well, parasailing, actually. He's got a Ferrari, so Kevin says, you're not selling this, we're driving this. And they go driving around a lot in the Ferrari. He has a kid and an ex-wife that I don't remember in the French version.
I don't remember. I just remember the guy being a lonely guy, and they hired this aide for him. I don't remember a wife.
And where that original is sweeter and gentler, this is a little broader, but not not to the point of being just a Kevin Hart vehicle, although I think that's why it made over $100 million.
Well, Bryan Cranston's a great actor. I mean, how's he in this
and
thing?
And he does it all in his eyes, and, you know, he can move his head and nothing else. And so, yeah, his acting with his eyebrows and eyes and his ears that he likes getting rubbed by a hooker, spoiler alert, are doing great. So yes, it's watchable. It's streaming now on lots of platforms, and I recommend.
But you like the original better, if given the choice.
It's different. Yeah.
If you're gonna like watch one of these yes. versions of this thing.
Well, I would. It's a great doubleheader. I mean, it's definitely worth seeing both of them. So I would say watch the French version first. Now I have to go on record. Now I don't do this often, and I hate to do it today. But I have to admit, even though you're not going to be right that it's a good movie or a bad movie.
Yeah, it's made, busted.
We had a rest in peace for Booksmart past weekend, which I said was going to be
tanked,
the
runner.
Okay, calm down. Don't get too high on that horse, because everybody still thinks it's a great movie, except
for
you.
Me.
And audiences who showed up for about $8.5 million this weekend.
Right.
But well, remember who released this movie?
A ton of Annapurna.
Yeah, and that's the problem.
Well, you know, first of all, it was a big trending. It was trending on Twitter. The fact people were very angry who liked the movie and saw the movie that why isn't this movie doing better? And a couple of people were commenting, not just civilians tweeting, but you click on like industry trade publications to links, and people were saying, well, first of all, there's no names in the movie whatsoever. I don't think that Beanie Feldstein is going to open up a movie. And so there's no names in it. Olivia Wilde directed it, but she's not in the film. And there's, sadly, and despite me not liking the movie, I think there's a gender bias. I mean, the fact that it's, you know...
Audiences want... Regular Joe Popcorn wants to see guys doing this kind of thing,
all these
unfortunately.
Like
and then somebody
hijinks.
Else pointed out that because of the lesbian story angle, in the Midwest, maybe it wasn't...
I don't know. I think
it's also only in 2,500 theaters.
No, they opened it wide.
Well, 2,500 is wide.
As wide as the 4,600 that the
Aladdin was in. Yeah.
But here's the thing, Bill Brigoli, is that, and I read this and I agree, is that despite me not caring for the movie, and we talked about this extensively the other week, I will tell you that I am a supporter of independent movies, and people like this movie, and if you have this movie, you're the distributor of this film, you do not open this movie on 2,500 screens. You platform this movie. You open it in a couple of cities, get word of mouth, then move it to a couple of more screens in those cities, open up to some more cities. That's how you...
I don't think that works anymore.
I think it does.
I think platforming is dead. I think you got to come out
of the gate.
Maybe, maybe it should have been on demand as well. Maybe it should have opened on multiple platforms.
Well,
but
I don't know.
I will tell you what I said on Twitter, which is that Aladdin made $120 million last weekend.
40, I think.
Yeah.
And... Olivia Wilde's movie made $8.5 million, but they're going to be clamoring to have Olivia Wilde direct another comedy, and nobody's going to want Guy Ritchie to direct another musical.
Well, I think Aladdin, as we talked about last week, I liked it. It's not as good as the original on any level, but it's
Guy
still
Ritchie
good...
will never direct another musical.
I think if you could do a live action movie version of Aladdin, as I said, I think it's a decent job, but. You know,
this isn't a career ender for her.
Listen,
for her, just
make I'm tell you
just agree
about,
with that.
I'll tell you something about Booksmart, okay?
Please,
favorably, okay?
I'm waiting.
Other than myself, who does not like the movie, as I've said repeatedly, a lot of people like this. Most people like this movie. Bill Brigoli, you saw the movie twice,
that's right?
Yeah.
And so I think that since people do like this movie, even though I don't, it's going to have very good word of mouth. And I think that it'll be around for a while. I think people
so
will
agree
see
that
recommend.
Olivia Wilde will develop will direct more.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, but I'm saying that I don't think the story's over. It the first weekend was kind of a bust, but I think that the people that did see it will probably recommend it. To
it
other
declined
people.
From Friday to Saturday. It declined from Friday to Saturday.
That's not a good
20%, which is never a good sign.
Here's a plug. Our Talking Pictures television show is on TV this weekend. Check your local listings on CUNY TV with myself, Bill McCuddy, Lisa Rossman, and Chris Najawadi from Entertainment Weekly. Follow me at Neil Rosen Apples, and I will give you more information on how to watch it, and I will send out links. And one of the things we talk about on this episode, which we're going to talk about now, is we do a summer preview, and we go through a whole host of litany of films that are opening. But I'd like to ask you all, and start with you, Bill Brigoli. If I
Toy Story
you,
4.
What are you looking forward to?
Toy Story 4.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
All right, that's it.
That's it.
The whole pile. So it's funny that you and I often agree, because that was what I said I was looking forward to on the television show that Neil alluded to and always does.
Well, we're all looking
forward
to
it. The one
that
I'm not on, yes.
I think Toy Story, as we said on the show, is one of those franchises that got better and better and better. And the third one, made everybody cry.
Wait, did you cry, Bill Brigoli?
Not the third one, the second one.
Really?
It had the Sarah McLachlan song that made me
cry. Well,
when
Woody got all his toys, found a new home for all those toys, man, me and my daughter, we just like tearing up, you know?
Stop it, Neil.
So the fourth one is about this new toy called Forky. Where the kid that owns all the toys takes a fork and slaps.
That's why,
like,
it's Toy Story 4.
Like a
four
Mr. Potato
short.
Head eye on it or something.
Four is short for Forky. That's why it's called Toy Story 4.
Yeah. Well, you know what Ethan Hawke said to me? I said, you know, you did Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and Before Midnight. If you do a fourth one, what are you going to call it? He goes, just B4.
Before my career's over.
Yeah, okay. I'm looking forward to that. I'm also very much looking forward to, I love Quentin Tarantino, although not a big fan of The Hateful Eight, his last film, but I'm really looking forward to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which just looks like a crazy-ass Quentin Tarantino film where he's going to, just like he did in Inglourious Basterds, all the Nazis, Hitler and Himmler and Goering, they all get killed in the end. I think this is about Sharon Tate and the Manson murders, and Brad Pitt plays the stunt double to Leonardo DiCaprio, who's a washed-up TV Western star.
Bruce Lee is in it.
Right, the character of Bruce Lee. Is in it,
and tons and tons and tons and tons of Quentin Tarantino dialogue.
Yeah, I think it's gonna. It looks
fun. No one will let him cut.
Audiences were mixed on it, and I have a feeling he's gonna recut it after that. That's what I'm hearing. So, he's actually threatening to make it longer.
Oh, no.
I'm not kidding.
Well, how long is it? 3 hours?
I don't know what the running time is now. Like 2:40, I think.
Yeah,
but
it was like 2 hours, 50 minutes.
Yeah,
Margot Robbie's in it playing Sharon Tate.
Right. Although the knock on her that the New York Times
I read that
person stood up and I watched it when it was live streaming.
Tell the story.
So, a New York Times reporter at this salon. Q&A with the cast and Quentin.
At Cannes.
And Quentin, the salon. And Quentin is, like, regaling them, and they love him over there. And, like, a booger in your soup, this New York Times reporter stands up and says, you have such a great actress in Margot Robbie, and she doesn't have many lines as Sharon Tate. And so before he can answer... Well, first of all, he says, I don't take your point, or I don't
disagree with you.
I don't take your point, I think is what he said. And he said, and he starts to talk, and then Margot Robbie jumps in and goes, you know, I felt it was fine. I wanted to, as an actor, I felt more.
Which it would have ended right there, would not have become a news story if that was the end of the story, but.
Yeah. he got miffed. He got like, and the French guy who's moderating it goes, well, I think that's all the time we have. And that was the end. Boom, mic drop. They were out of there.
Wow.
So anyway, the couple of reviewers have said that it drags in places, which is something I don't think you could ever say about a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Hateful Eight dragged in a lot of places. But that was a stage play.
Say it drags if you like the script. And one of the things that's great about Tarantino is if a scene is long, it's because somebody is talking while somebody else has got a bomb underneath the floor. Or, like, you know what I mean? There's, like, always something going on that the extra dialogue just makes it feel more and more tense. I guess that's not the element in all of the scenes, is what I'm saying in this film, based on what I'm hearing. So I'm dying to see it as well. It's definitely on my list. In fact, it's probably the thing I want to see more than anything
else. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
July 26th.
TV show, Bill McCuddy recommended a movie that I'm really looking forward to because I love Jim Jarmusch. And it's a zombie. You described
the
it as
zombies walk amongst us, or the dead don't die.
Don't
I think
die.
The dead don't die.
And it's with Bill Murray and Danny Glover, and
it's got an all-star cast.
What's her name? Chloe Sevigny.
Oh, yeah.
And The trailer looks really hilarious. And
well, deadpan is the word for it, apparently.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, so I'm looking forward to that. So there actually are, I was thinking, there were a bunch of movies this summer. Usually I dread the summer movies. There are all these action, Marvel, DC bullshit movies. But there's actually a bunch of movies this summer that I'm like, yeah, I'm looking forward to this and I'm looking forward to that. So
we talked about last week the Christine Applegate thing that I tried to get through.
Yeah. I'm on episode 7 now. It's going downhill. It's just
Got through 3 or 4. We're talking about Dead to Me.
Yeah. And you know, they threw up the 6th episode now, The Handmaid's Tale. I've now gone through 6 episodes, and that show's kind of, unless they do a
creaky
turnaround.
Creaky too.
What?
Creaky as well.
It's starting to jump the shark. It's not. I won't say it jumped. But I'm saying it's like it's starting to jump. And I turned to my wife last night. We were watching episode 6 of season 3. And I'm like, you know, I'm just getting fed up with this. It's just the same shit. And there's no relief for it's just all bad news. There's this, nothing. They don't even throw you like a morsel of like, this is great.
It's kind
of
like living through the Trump administration, isn't it?
Yeah. Or like,
it's,
you know,
one bad day after another.
Yeah. So,
well, Elizabeth Moss and even Brandon Tartikoff, who has a piece of it, will all be fascinated.
Brandon Tartikoff is dead.
No, who's the guy you're interviewing next? Oh, Warren Littlefield.
Warren Littlefield.
They'll all be fascinated to hear this podcast because Neil is doing the junket with 12 of the stars of the show next week. So maybe they can explain to you how it gets better by episode 7 or 8.
That would happen. You know.
Hey, we started this podcast with a very unfunny joke of mine, and I don't even remember what I said, but Neil said that wasn't very funny. So
no, it really
I want to end with, or we can talk about whatever else you want, but I don't want to forget. June 10th, I'll be at Caroline's Comedy Club on Broadway. So Neil, bring tomatoes, sit close, and wear that shirt. I'd like you to sit up front.
What's the matter with the shirt?
It's a June 10th. It's a Monday night. We get a lot of famous people and me who come on Monday nights and try stuff out. So if you're in the New York area, it's on Broadway and 50th.
Bill is funny. 7 o'clock. Stand-up. I've seen the stand-up stuff. It is. Okay. He is funny. I do.
What's coming next week?
Well, funny you should ask. Something called Dark Phoenix from Fox.
Yeah, I'm looking.
Yeah, we're all going to that Monday.
Yeah, I'm going. Late Night, which I think you guys are going to see tomorrow.
Emma Thompson.
That's right. And The Secret Life of Pets, two.
Without Louis C.K.?
That's right.
Well, of course
not. Now, here's
the
question. Yeah. On Secret Life of Pets 2. Now, we all know.
Will the jokes be for adults and kids?
Having covered movies for many, many years, we know that these animated features are in production for years before we actually see them.
Right.
And I'm assuming that they brought the cast back from the original Secret Life of Pets. And Louis C.K., did he start tracking the voice and then they cut him out or something?
Sure, they could, you know, they can still do ADR.
Well, wait a minute. Do we know for a fact that he's not in it?
Additional dialogue recording. It's when they do it after the
fact. But he's saying if they've drawn the character, and what character was Louis?
He was the star of the movie. He was the main dog, the big dog.
So if he's been drawn into it again, all they can do is replace the guy.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, I'm sure that, Me Too hit Louis C.K. about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago? How long do you think it's been?
It's been every bit of a year and a half. I don't think it's been 2.
Okay.
We all got screeners right around the time they were giving out screeners, so it was a good year and a half.
Right, I Love You Daddy movie with Chloe Grace Moretz. Right.
It wasn't called I Love You Daddy.
It sure was.
It was?
Yeah.
It wasn't was.
I Love You with Chloe Grace Moretz.
I think it was called I Love You Daddy.
Yeah, I think it was.
Okay.
Well, anyway, so the point is, this had to be on the drawing board for a long time, and it's not like when the guy in Toy Story, Jim Varney, who died, who played Slinky Dog. Okay,
right.
It's a minor character. You can get kind of sound-alike guy, and it's not really that integral to the storyline. I mean, the entire Secret Life of Pets revolved around. It would be like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. I mean, this was he was the main character. So this had to have been in production for a while, and like you said, Bill Brigoli, they either cut him out or decided to get a sound-alike or something, but...
Well, let's find out.
I don't know. But I did like Secret Life of Pets, the original. I thought it was kind of okay. I mean, it wasn't a Pixar movie, but it was all right. You know, Louis was funny. Yeah. There were some other voices in there. Was Gilbert in that one?
No.
Gilbert was not in that one. But Gilbert's cropped up. Your friend Gilbert Gottfried has cropped up in a couple of things. And I will tell you, speaking about a couple of
David Edelstein in New York Magazine wrote an interesting review of the live action Aladdin. And he said, I never thought I'd say this, but, and in fact, I hate myself for saying it, but I really missed Gilbert Gottfried's voice.
Well, I said that to you.
He's missed.
That Iago, the parrot, did nothing for me in Aladdin, whereas Gilbert was just like a breath of fresh air in that first
one.
And, you know, to go toe-to-toe with Robin Williams, I mean, that's no easy feat because, you know, but they were both great in that original movie. Started watching...
Looks like Louis C.K. is not in this Secret Life of Pets 2, just to correct you before, or just to add to your...
Go ahead.
It looks like a guy named Chris Renaud has taken over. Who's Norman? Is Norman the name of the dog?
I don't remember the name
of
the dog.
And Kevin Hart is in that as well.
Kevin Hart was in the original.
Tiffany Haddish and Harrison Ford.
Kevin Hart was in the original Secret Life of Pets. Our friend Jeff Ross, I started watching
Roastmaster General.
I started watching his series last night. He does historical roasts. He does Abraham Lincoln. He does Freddie Mercury. And the one I wanted to watch, but my wife said, no, I'm not sitting through this. I said, no, I saw him on The Tonight Show. He said it's not as in bad taste as you would think. He roasts Anne Frank. And Gilbert Gottfried plays Hitler in the roast. and I forgot.
It's not as bad as you think.
I did not watch that one.
As bad as you think, and Hitler's in it. Now, what's wrong with that sentence?
Gilbert Gottfried plays Hitler. So I did not see that particular episode. I started watching the Freddie Mercury one. And
remember, he played Abraham Lincoln, too.
He played Abraham Lincoln. Oh, Gilbert's Abraham Lincoln?
Yeah, he played Abraham Lincoln in 100 Ways or a Million Ways to Die in the West.
Oh, okay.
Gilbert's kind of become the Tony Randall of the... You remember how you could plug Tony Randall into like anything? He would come on and be in a sketch or do anything.
But this podcast.
In the old Tonight Shows and stuff. And yeah.
Yes, and Letterman would always wheel him out for something.
Yeah.
And
Colbert seems to be using him a lot, too.
Yeah, he uses them in that redacted sketch.
But John Oliver uses him quite a bit.
Yeah.
He's like... And we sent, you know, Gilbert Gottfried's going to read. What did he read? Like
the Mueller report.
The Mueller report.
He read the Mueller report.
Yeah, that was before Colbert.
Right. Yeah. So we love Gilbert. He's funny.
We should have him on sometime.
We should try. Believe me, I tried.
We could just call him one time and talk to him, and then he'd go, "Is this a podcast?"
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's right. All right, so next week we have those movies and...
a lot more.
All right, and this Friday again, follow me on Twitter at Neil Rosenapples and get all the details on the Talking Pictures television show that's on this weekend. And it will also, understand that it's also going to be on All Arts the following week, which is an All Arts television station on PBS.
Oh.
So more on that.
Is it closed captioned?
Everything is closed captioned on CUNY TV. Everything is closed captioned.
Wow. Good to know.
Do you guys, before we go, have a
problem? Oh, boy, there's always one more thing.
I have a problem
there?
When you watch Netflix, turning the subtitles off. I'll go through all these things to get the subtitles off my screen and then, you know, turn the TV on.
The next time
I go to Netflix, the subtitles are back again. I got to go through
all
this.
Do not have that problem.
No.
You do not have that problem. Okay, no. Maybe it's my Apple TV. Who knows? Anyway, how do we follow you, Bill McCuddy?
At Bill McCuddy.
And how do we follow you, Bill Bergoli?
Believe it or not.
In a cab.
I'm on Instagram.
Would you like,
which is a long story.
You're on Instagram
now?
I'm on Instagram now, yeah.
Wow. Oh, my God.
We buried the lead.
Someone grabbed my phone at a bar, let's put it this way, last Saturday, and she said, "You're not getting out enough. You need to be seen more. I'm putting you on Instagram." And
wow. Now, like Dolly Levi you met?
No. my neighbor.
Hello, Dolly reference, folks.
But yeah, at the local pub, I was put on Instagram. I put one picture on there, the one that she put on. And I still don't know how to use it. I got to go.
How do we find you on there?
Look for Bill Bergoli.
Is it at Bill Bergoli? Is that it?
Try it. I don't know.
The man has no idea.
I have no idea. Someone forced me.
This is the funniest
Instagram
thing on the whole show.
Forced on me.
You go to Caroline's June 10th and do the 10 minutes.
That's it.
I'll sit and laugh at you.
What do we do here?
We beg Bill Bergoli to get on social media, and it finally works.
That's
and
amazing.
We also watch the bad movies so you don't have to.
Anyway, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. Watch Talking Pictures this weekend, and we'll sit around talking movies with you next week.
Thank you.